God, grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am so excited for this moment. Our speaker is being recorded tonight with his or her permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren at this moment. I'd like to introduce this evening's speaker, Marissa from Huntington Beach.
Good evening. My name is Marissa, and I'm alcoholic. And I've been practicing that all week, so I didn't get it wrong. You know, I'm alcoholic and narcissistic, too. I mean, I got to get it right. You're looking at me, and it's all about me. So anyway, grateful to be sober and grateful to be in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you, Marcia, for asking me to speak, to participate in my own sobriety, and maybe share something with you that's been shared with me. And it's an honor and a privilege to be back in this room and actually be the speaker. I came to this meeting for a couple of years when I first got sober this time. I have to tell the truth, okay? Let me tell you a few other things about myself. My sobriety date is January 20th, 2001. And my sponsor is Kathy Williams Sloan. And I have a home group, the Friday Night Here and Now meeting in Laguna Beach at 8 p.m. on Wesley Avenue. And the rest of what I may tell you may come from the big book, and it may be my opinion, and hopefully it's the truth. It is a privilege to be here. And I actually, when I came back this time, I actually, at 60 Days Sober, the women's group that meets before this meeting, gave me a commitment, the treasurer. Granted, I think we had maybe $20 that we had to keep, but I was like, oh my God, I used to steal for all my drugs, alcohol, and whatever. It's like, oh my God, are you trusting me with money? And they kept giving me commitments for 2 years. Damn it, they kept me around, even when I didn't want to stay. And I showed up one night, and I was going to turn over. I was the secretary by this time, and I was going to turn over everything, and you know, I was just going to leave, and I was on my way to slip my wrist or something, drive off a cliff, but I, you know what? My feet were trained where to go, and you know what they say, take the feet and the mind will follow. And I ended up having dinner with a couple of sober women that night and drove home that night and slept peacefully instead of taking my life. But, you know, it is a wee program. If you haven't got a pack to hang out with, some road dogs, as they say, whatever, get yourself a tribe. Get in the middle, stay in the middle, and be a part of. I'd like to thank my friend Andrea for leading this evening. It's a real pleasure to have you, and Nick and Elias and Susan for being here with me and supporting me. Wow. So, you know my sobriety date, my home group, my sponsor, I'm sober. How did I get here? What happened, what it was like, and you know what, and I remember what it was like when I got back this time, and I keep saying this time because, you know, relapse is not a part of recovery, but it is a part of my story. So if you have relapsed, if you're new again, welcome back. I'd like to welcome our newcomers and our out-of-state visitors. Welcome. Really glad you're here in our meeting sharing with us. And Fred, it's really good to see you again. I remember you bringing your guys in and setting up, and like it's just that level of service is what makes Alcoholics Anonymous and makes a person's life different. And I told you that I have had some relapses. Let me tell you one other thing while I'm talking about mentioning Fred and services. I was sitting in a meeting with my sponsor and her wife the other night, and it dawned on me, we're talking about step 12. And it dawned on me that since I got back into the program this time, that I had been directed many times to go be of service. And it dawned on me that I've been of service throughout my whole sobriety. And that in previous, I call them bouts of sobriety, I really hadn't. And I thought, gee, I wonder if that has something to do with why I stayed this time. So get involved. Be involved. Be in the middle. The woman you see standing before you this evening in Alcoholics Anonymous, a sober, dignified lady, actually, somehow, at least part of the time, is not the woman that came to these rooms. Matter of fact, when I came to these rooms, I wasn't a woman, I was a man. And I want to clarify that right up front, so you, as I tell my story, I tell you I grew up as a little boy. Well, they told me I was a little boy. So that some of the things I may say may make sense. And it really confused me. You know, they kept, you know, it's like, I'm in kindergarten and I line up with the girls and the teacher comes over and makes me line up with the boy. I'm just like, what's wrong? I don't fit. I don't belong. You know, and I just had this sense of being out of place in the world. Now, I will tell you that this experience of being transsexual did not make me an alcoholic. However, it may have contributed a little bit to the sense of unease, disease, and restlessness, irritability, and discontent that I think I experienced from, well, probably 6 months, I guess. I walked around the world feeling like I was wearing a porcupine suit turned inside out. I wasn't miserable, but I was uncomfortable. It just, certain things were comfortable, but I was told not to do those. I was told not to be that way. I don't know if I grew up in an alcoholic family or not, but there was alcohol around. My dad was a heavy drinker, but he isn't now. I don't know. Actually, there was a certain amount of alcoholism in my family. When I was 6 years old, my favorite grandfather, Grandpa Marvin, he was the Easter Bunny, he was Yankee Doodle Dandy, he was Santa Claus, he was New Year's, he was Halloween, all wrapped up in one person. He found it necessary to take a bottle of booze, go out in the car, sit in his car in the garage, and asphyxiate himself and kill himself. Actually, he did what I probably would have done. He didn't. He died slowly. It took him a few days. The trauma that began to occur in my family is that my mother ended up being in the psych ward, and I'm at 6 years old, the oldest child, and I was sort of the apple of my mom's eye and my dad's too, and my grandparents just adored me. I was a little princess as a little boy. Okay, I just was, you know. And I mean, I had bikes and I had dolls. Okay, I just. And that made sense to me, okay? But it didn't make, you know, it didn't make sense to a lot of other people, and it was like one of those things, it was one of many secrets that we had. There were a lot of pink elephants in our family. When my grandfather committed suicide, it was a pink elephant. We did, you know, we danced around it. We didn't talk about it, you know? That my mom was in the psych ward. Well, we didn't talk about that, you know? That my dad had other girlfriends besides my mom. We didn't talk about that. You know, that we just, it was just on and on and on. So there wasn't heavy alcohol use in the family, but there was alcoholism. My mother became a very, actually before she got married to my father, she was probably quite the, my grandfather being an alcoholic, she learned to be a little manipulator, caretaker, and enabler. And she did pass that on to Moi as well. And, but just a few of my finer characteristics, which we'll get to down the way in steps 6 and 7. I didn't know that I had some of these things until I actually took some of these steps with you guys. Oh, my God. Oh. But I don't have to carry those around today. And these secrets that I used to have to think I had to carry around and not talk about, I don't have to carry around. They're not secrets. I'm talking to you from the podium here about it now. You know, I used to not want to talk to anybody in private. So here I am, this little boy girl, growing up, I played dress up with my girlfriend neighbors and rode bikes with the boys and played baseball and all, you know, I was just, and actually, thank you for the water, I do need this. I grew up in the Midwest, Terre Haute, Indiana, a overgrown farm town. Just outside of town, there was a really nice place called the Rod and Gun Club. It had secret exits. John Dillinger actually liked to go there. Okay, and when I was growing up in this little town, Martinsville, Indiana, there was this guy, he was, they called him a grand dragon that was in our neighborhood. So I grew up with a lot of weird stuff. You didn't want people to know certain things about you. You wanted to be white, male, and you wanted to be Christian. And you didn't want to be anything but that, because that was what, you know. And so I learned I wasn't going to tell people a lot of things about me. And as I was growing up, my grandparents, my dad's parents would come over to the house and they would play cards and they would have the neighbors over. And I was 5, 6 years old and I was a little cocktail waitress and bartender for my family. I learned very early. I think that wrote it. So, and I learned how to make my dad's Scotch and Waters, my grandpa's Bourbon and Seventh, and my grandmother's Manhattans. I know before I was in, definitely by the time I was in first grade. And I knew exactly how to make them because I knew exactly how they're supposed to taste, and whatever they didn't finish well, that was just fine with me. that probably wasn't my first drinks. My first drinks were probably when I was teething. I know that even later on that honey and bourbon was given to me as cough syrup. So I don't know when my first drink was. I wish I could tell you. That first rubbing of the bourbon on the gums was probably the first and last social drinking I did. Because I gotta tell you, from that point on, whenever I could get my hands on it, hands off, it's mine. Either I'm gonna beat you up or stop you with my heels. One of the two. And, you know, I might help you get some, but I was always gonna get more. More for me, you know. And I carried that through into my life. And somewhere along the way, I actually found out I was really good at reading and writing and arithmetic and all this good stuff. And school came pretty easily for me. Till junior high school, and my parents finally, on their fourth attempt, divorced, and I hit puberty. So two major things happened to me all at once. The alcohol left the house with my dad. That was horrifying. And even more horrifying was my body began betraying me, and I began experiencing testosterone poisoning. I began growing facial hair and hair on my chest and legs, and I was like, oh my God, you know, this is not supposed to be happening, you know. But it was. But I could, and I'm having all this trauma and issue, but this is 1969, 1970, this is early 1970s, and like, who in the Midwest am I going to tell? You know? Come on, like, you know? So my mother had recovered from her bout with the psych wards and her psych meds. She had found, a very fundamental, Christian organization. So I followed along being my mother's caretaker that I had become, and I spent a few years trying that till the pain of their love almost killed me, because I was taught more shame, guilt, and remorse. And I have a God, I have a higher power today that I truly love and I'm truly grateful for. But I had a teaching that taught me that I was the problem and that I was wrong. And that's toxic shame. There is healthy shame and healthy guilt. You know, I broke something and I need to make amends for it, and, you know, and then I can feel sorry and then I can move on. But when it's not there is a problem, but I am the problem, there's only two solutions: drink, use, or die, and or recover. There is a third. So I get into high school, I'm not drinking or anything, and things are going pretty well, but then it's getting even more uncomfortable personally for me. And my dad and I have kind of reconciled a little bit, so I'm living part-time with him and part-time with my mother, and I'm part-time being a girl, part-time being a boy. It's like I'm just, you know, I can't, you know, it's like trying to, I became more personalities and tried to, you know, like balance and remember who I told what. And it's like, you know, it's like really, it got really hard. And somewhere along the way, my dad let me have a drink again at his house. And oh my God. Oh my God. I was okay. And I was okay with you being not okay or okay with me. And you seemed to be more okay with me being me when we were both drunk than when we were both sober. It was like, you know, it was just okay. I fit in. And I learned that certain things were important. My dad taught taught me that, you know, don't get in trouble, keep your grades up, blah, blah, blah. I learned to be a really responsible drunk. You know, my dad didn't care if I drank as long as I didn't drive or leave the house, or if I was someplace else, I'd call him and just tell him. So I did, you know, and I learned how to get away with things. Duh. I mean, it was just amazing. And so at the end of high school, I'm drinking and I'm being boy's girl, and sometimes when I can with a couple friends being a girl, it's like, it really gets crazy. And so, I ended up going to college at Indiana University. I graduated from high school with a 3.88 GPA. I had an AB in band because I pissed off the band director. I was a smart ass. I still am, you know, and my dad always told me it's better to be a smart ass than a dumbass. So I chose the lesser of two weevils, you know, and anyway, and I had resentment at that band director for quite a while, and then I realized, you know, he was right. I was an asshole. But I began drinking in the end of high school quite a bit, and then I went off to college. My dad told me that with my grades, I got a small scholarship. He'd pay for the rest of school if I kept my grades up. So I went off to Indiana University, and this little boy girl joins a fraternity. Okay, so I'm trying to fit in. Well, the one nice thing about the fraternity is they drank and they smoked and they did drugs, and there was a lot of, you know, things happening in oblivion that, you know, I remember walking out of the, I thought I had a great time at this fraternity party, and I guess I threw up all over everybody on the dance floor. I thought it was a great party, but I guess everybody else didn't think I was so hot. You know, I probably had been blacking out before that, but I love blackouts. Wish I could have them now, actually, you know, just without drinking, you know, because it's great time travel, you know. I'd start off on a Friday, and the next thing you know, I'd be at work on Monday, and I'd been there for a while, and I'm like, oh, that is cool. What am I doing here? Because I came out of blackouts in the middle of classes. I came out of blackouts when I was working at a restaurant at a bar, and I'm in the middle of serving, and I'm like, I come out of a blackout, and I'm like, am I coming or am I going? Am I picking up or am I, what the hell? I have to stop somebody and ask them, and they inform me, so what, are you okay? What's wrong? I said, oh, I just had a complete lapse of memory in 3 days. The last thing I remembered was Friday, and it was Monday, and I was working the lunch shift. But that didn't bother me. That wasn't, getting picked up in Houston when I followed my dad to Houston because, you know, my dad was like a source of, I kind of manipulated him. I learned to be a little manipulator and a little conniver, even though I was still a guy at the time, or at least I looked like one. You know, I wore a little bit of makeup all the time. You know, but Dad looked out for me. When I was in Houston, I found a lot of people that drank the way I did. You know, and we would start off and we'd be heading down to a friend's place in Galveston, and I'd wake up and we'd be in New Orleans, or, you know, I'd be like, oh wow, didn't know we were going here. And that was okay. That was normal. I didn't think there was, I didn't get that was odd. You know, it just wasn't odd. But it began getting more and more weird because as time was passing, I was also getting more and more uncomfortable in my skin. And I was beginning to really, really die because Marissa was Mark at that time. And I couldn't be Marissa. And I was hiding and running from myself. I was hiding and running from you. And none of that made me an alcoholic because I'll tell you what, when alcohol hit my system, it did something for me that nothing else did. And I like to supplement it with a lot of other things, especially white powder and both up the nose and in the veins. And you know what? I'm grateful that I also combined that because I think it helped bring me to my knees to the point where I found something that I didn't know I needed. I found a willingness. In Houston, Texas, on July 4th, 1984, I couldn't stand living anymore. And I went to the Central Park, Herman Park, downtown, to celebrate with some friends, but I made sure I took a couple of extra loaded syringes for the primary purpose of sitting under a tree and taking my life. Gratefully and needless to say, I did not do right. I failed. And when I came out of that, I was totally freaked out. My dad had moved to Dallas by that time, so 4 days later, I came out of my, I'd been out of it for 4 days. I'd been sleeping on some friend's sofa. I didn't actually have my own place, but I didn't know that I was homeless. I just had friends I stayed with, you know, and I mean, I always had lots of stuff. And so people were always happy to have me, and because I knew people that had lots of stuff, and so my friends didn't mind me being around. It's amazing how many friends I had, you know, that would do things with me, would follow me, would do things for me, because I had friends that had stuff. But when the shit hit the fan, when I really needed somebody to be there for me, you know what? Fortunately, there was one person that was, and then also my dad, and he said, okay, I'm going to fly you up here. We're going to get you some help. I was so terrified that I actually didn't pick up a drink or a drug for almost a year. Never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous yet. This was in 1984, 1985. I did get sent to a therapist, and he really suggested that I go to church and turn my life and my will over the care of his Savior, and he didn't put it that way. He pretty much said that I needed to do a lot of things that didn't make sense. And they still don't make sense, most of them. The one thing he did say that I didn't get was that I didn't get that I was powerless. I still didn't get that. And I don't know if he talked about that or not. But he was, I still had a plan B, C, D, E, F, V through double Z. During that time, I went back to school. I went back to taking dance classes. I danced with the Fort Worth City Ballet for 2 years. I actually got to meet Baryshnikov and several people that danced with major ballet companies around the world. You know, it's amazing what can happen in a person's life when we're not drinking. You know, the places we can go, the people we can meet, and the things that happen to us. It's just like, but that doesn't happen to me when I'm drinking, because all I'm planning on doing is how am I going to get the next drink? How am I going to keep booze around? And nothing happens. I just go from bar to bar, house to house, people to person, using you up, being used up by you till one of us gets too tired of it. While I was there, I met somebody. I got involved in teaching aerobics classes, and Martha decided that she was going to, she met this guy, and she's going to move out to California. I said I'd help her move out here. Got out here. By this time, I was drinking again, but I was controlling it. I wasn't always enjoying it, so I was, sometimes I was kind of controlling it, but the most amazing thing happened tonight. We're coming down here for me to speak, and we decided to meet at, what's the name of the Writer's Cafe? And we're standing in line, and all of a sudden, I go out with friends to different places and clubs all the time. I've served drinks and bartended and cocktails since I've been sober this time. But I'm standing there looking at all those draft beers. And I don't know what was so, I was just entranced. It was bizarre. I was like, and then I saw this one, this Chimay Ale. Oh my God. When I was in Dallas, Fort Worth, that was my, oh my God. I'm like, I'd forgotten all about it. And I'm like, I could taste it. I'm like, oh my God. And that's been 26 years. I mean, 25. It's been some, I'm like, wow. That's the kind of alcoholic I am. I don't forget the taste of a certain drink for 2 or 3 decades. I don't think I ever will. I mean, I was practically salivating. I was like, oh. Anyway, I thought, and I'm going to go speak at a meeting. What kind of sobriety is this shit? But I thought about that. Wow, you know what? I don't have to drink that day. I can actually think about it. I can remember it. I remember what it was. And I also remember the fact that the hangovers I got from that shit was so freaking bad. Oh my God. And I don't have to wake up with a hangover. I get to wake up with my two dogs licking and kissing me to wake me up and take them for a walk. You know, I couldn't have dogs or pets or animals back then, and I'll tell you why. Because I might not come home to feed them for a day, a week, who knows how long, you know. And they might also get into my booze or my drugs, and I tell you that because that did happen. And I can never make amends for that, except what I can do is be a better pet parent today. So I ended up helping Martha move out here in 1986. I got out here. I loved it. I called my boss. I said, you know what? I'm not coming back. Thank you very much. I'll mail my keys. Have a nice life. You're an asshole anyway. Yeah, I did. So I started teaching aerobics classes out here. And so I'm running around. And, okay, I'm still living as Mark. I'm still identified as male. But I'm this very flamboyant aerobics instructor. And, you know, I'm a lesbian now, too. So I've always preferred women. So it was very confusing to me and everybody. But I was a wonderful aerobics instructor. We had lots of fun. I taught classes all over Orange County. People wanted me to come and guest teach and all kinds of stuff. And then in 1988, I'd met some people, and we'd ended up going up to Long Beach and going out and partying and dancing and drinking at one of those fun, friendly gay bars. And I'm driving back, and I thought, you know, I hadn't had quite enough, so I stopped at this place in Costa Mesa, the Newport Station, and had a couple more. And then I'm living on the peninsula here, running a very nice health club in Newport Beach, and I live on the peninsula, so I drive down there, 1:30 in the morning. I live at Balboa Pier. I've got a permit to park in the parking lot as my parking lot. I live right there. So I'm driving in, and the parking lot is practically empty. It's amazing. So I'm driving in, and I'm just having a blast through the parking lot. Pull into my parking spot, and all of a sudden, woo, 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 the bubble gum machines, and I get out of my car, and I go off to where I'm, hi, I live right there. He goes, so, do you know what you were doing? I go, well, parking in my parking lot. He goes, this is a public parking lot? I'm like, oh. So I got to visit the Newport Beach jail. You know, and being that I was a little bit, wearing a little bit of makeup and everything, it was nice to go to Newport Beach jail. It was much better than Orange County Santa Ana jail. I'll get to that. Now this is my second visit to jail. My first was in Houston, and they actually picked me up in a parking lot for doing loop-de-loops too drunk. They didn't, in Texas, they didn't charge me the DUI. They charged me the public intoxication. You know what? Because you can have open containers in your car. So since I wasn't on a public street, they just made it public. I was like, right on, love Texas, let's go back there. No, you know, but you can also carry guns in your car loaded. So, well, not loaded, but people do. Anyway, so I got my first DUI. So I get out, and I am kind of traumatized because I've gone to court, and it's going to cost me some money this time. And I'm going to have to do 4 AA classes. I'm going to have to go to a MAD class. And I forget what else, you know. And I was like, oh, man, this is really ridiculous. So I'm sharing with one of my clients at the health club. This is a high-end Newport Beach health club. Ann B. from San Clemente, some of you know her. And I was telling her all about this. She's got 8 years at the time, and I'm just going, oh, my God, I can't believe this, blah, 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 blah. And she goes, really, really, really? And she goes, well, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, really? You're not an alcoholic. You know, I'm like, okay. So she starts talking, and I'm like, well, she's got money, and she's doing well. She wants to take me out to dinner and take me to one of these gathering things. So, okay, well, I can do that, you know. You know, this is a nice lady. So we go out to a nice dinner in Newport Beach, Punta del Mar. Then we go down to the old Canyon Club. It was really decrepit then, but it was cool, you know. And the Saturday night meeting was a visiting speakers meeting, and her group happened to be speaking that night, doing their pitches, like 6 of them get up and talk, and we're sitting at these tables and chatting at the break, and they gave me the 20 questions, and I got 17 right, but, you know, you needed 20. It wasn't a perfect score, so I couldn't be an alcoholic. You know, and I laughed and I enjoyed, and I thought, gosh, you guys are crazy. I haven't done that. Well, I did that. I didn't go to jail in Mexico yet, you know, but you know, I still got a lot of yes out there, and I hope I don't ever hit some of them. I thought that I was different because I hadn't done some of the things that you'd done. I thought that I was different because if you had to deal with what I had to deal with, it wasn't the alcohol that was the problem. It was my dad, my mom, my grandfather. It was the, you know, it was that I was transsexual. It was this. It was that. It was that people don't understand me. I was like, you know, I don't have to, you know. And so driving home that night, and what's really interesting is Anne's story of mine, when it came to the various substances and places to go, the people we met, and I was right down there and up there, and I knew some people, some very powerful people out there that were very dangerous. And I drove away from one house, and as I was driving away with quite a bit of cocaine in my car, I could have gone away for a couple of decades with what I had, and that was nothing compared to what was in the house. About 20 SWAT cars went the other way. Never saw those people again. I just missed it by inches and seconds. And you know they say it's inches and seconds. And so anyway, I'm back. Let's get on with the story here. I'm out here, and so we're driving back, and I tell her, you know, Ann, I'm really glad they have some place like this for people like you. You know, and I really honestly meant that. I didn't get it. A couple of years later, things were going really well, so I thought I'd decide to celebrate, and I picked up some extra stuff, and I was partying, and I ended up deciding it was time to take my life because I just couldn't keep going. Ended up in college hospital, Costa Mesa. Talked myself into the psych ward rather than going into detox program. But I began talking to somebody and telling the truth. That was in 1990. Long time. I ended up with 4.5 years of sobriety. My first sponsor, Steve A., was a urologist, a surgeon. When I was 90 days sober and I'm freaking out, I don't know how I'm going to stay sober, I call him up and tell him the truth about myself. And he tells me, you know what? I've worked with some doctors that did those surgeries. Why don't you come over to my house and we'll talk? He told me that there were actually gay people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was surprised. I was shocked. You know, and then I said, why don't you give yourself a year to get sober and maybe you can do something about this? 2.5 years later, I was able to put myself into therapy and actually begin the process of transitioning. You know, they say you can change anything Alcoholics Anonymous, and you truly can. You can become anything you want and even more than you like you can imagine. And I have to admit, I only had a certain amount of willingness to be honest. And so it carried me for 4.5 years, and I drank and used again. I got sober again in 1996, and I ended up down here in San Clemente. And I was getting a little bit more willing and a little bit more honest, and I lost my job, and not through it really any direct fault of my own, and I couldn't find work because I was now living full time as Marissa, but I had no job history as Marissa. And it was just, I found a job working as a cocktail waitress in a sports bar up in Irvine. Oh my God, I loved it because I loved working in restaurants. I love entertaining people. I love it. And I stayed sober at that job for about 3 months. One night I drank a beer. I drank a beer. Wow, maybe I could do this. 6 months later, I got DUI on July 1st, 1999. It was a .07. They took me to jail. I'm in my short little cocktail outfit. But my driver's license says female, but I haven't had surgery yet. So I get booked as a female. My paperwork goes over to the women's side. I'm being taken into the women's prison at jail site, and they do a pat down, and well, guess what? This female guard slams me against the wall, and next thing I know, I've got these two big giant male guards hauling me off to the men's site. Then I get hauled off to the psych ward where a male guard, a female guard, and a nurse are then making me do strip, and then they let me get dressed, and they put me in a private cell. It was kind of bizarre because a couple of people there were just okay, and a couple of people there were very scary. And then when they went to release me, oh my God, they lost my paperwork. I was on one side and it was on the other, and I thought, oh my God, I'm trapped here. I can't get out of this place. Now, I got out of there, and I went to court 4 weeks later, and because it was a .07, the VA decided not to press charges. So that night I drank and celebrated and I got another DUI. Repeat the process. Expecting different results. Now, I show up for court then, and the judge says, do you have an attorney? I go, no, what? He goes, you know what, I'm going to give you a continuance for 3 weeks. You need to get an attorney. Be here with your attorney in 3 weeks. At such, I'm like, oh, my God. So I got an attorney, we got to start talking, and they wanted to throw the books at me. 3 weeks, 3 years in jail, and all kinds of fines and stuff. Gratefully, he worked with me, and even though I showed up at court that day a little bit lit and with an 8-ball of cocaine in my pocket and just doing a line, I was then given the opportunity to do a treatment program for 60 days, and if I stayed clean and sober for 6 months, that they would consider, they would just put me on informal probation. Okay, well, needless to say, I didn't stay clean and sober. That was January of 2000. I did get myself checked into a place that was South Coast Recovery. It used to be down here in San Juan. And they let me be on premises as Marissa, as a female. And they gave me a chance. And I stayed sober from, I think it was March of 2000 through May of 2000. I got out a month after I got out of that treatment program. I'm working in a bar again. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, thinking I wasn't going to drink, and I drank. And it was on like Donkey Kong. And at that point, I made a decision I wasn't gonna be without my booze or my drugs. I turned my life and my will over to the care of the bag and the bottle. And I know I haven't even gotten sober yet. This is really. But you know what happened? That was the best thing that happened to me. Because 6 months later, I was crawling on my knees. And living in San Juan, I'd been working at a bar, I'd been totally insane. And the bar, I was trying to do my DUI school, and I kept getting kicked out because I couldn't show up on time or I couldn't show up clean and sober. And finally I decided, you know what, they're going to close the bar to clean it up. I'm working in another bar. Jesus Christ, don't learn. So I'm going to detox myself because they're closing the bar to clean up and do a cleanup. I'll detox myself and then I'll go back to AA and I'll go to my DUI program. But on the way home, I picked up a bottle. I picked up another bag. And the next thing I knew, it was a week later. And I was coming out of a blackout and I did not know what had happened. And I hadn't gone back to work. And I hadn't gone to a meeting and I hadn't gone to the DUI class. There was no food in the house, there was no drugs in the house, there was no alcohol in the house. I didn't know, I was shaking, I was miserable, I was practically sick. I had a partial beard growing because I hadn't finished the electrolysis yet, but I needed something. I had $20, so I called and ordered a pizza to be delivered. And this was 11 o'clock in the morning. Because I thought I'd get some food in my stomach, stop the shake, so I'd get to the bank, so I'd get some money, so I'd get another bottle, so I'd get, and get my connection, get some drugs. Standing at that door 20 minutes later was Boston Kelly, delivering my pizza. 10 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'd sat in meetings at the Beach Bells with years before. And Kelly did the most wonderful thing. She said, hi. She treated me like a human being. She didn't 12-step me. She did 12-step me without saying AA. And I said, I think I know you. She said, yeah, I'm Kelly from the Beach Bells meeting. I go, oh. Now, when she was standing at the door, I have to tell you, I didn't know if I should open that door and get that pizza or run and hide. Fortunately, I was hungry enough, so that won out, but I truly stood at the turning point, and I'm grateful that I did, that I was hungry enough to open that door. And as she started to walk away, I said something that I meant for the deepest part of my gut. I said, stop, wait, I think I need help. I started asking for help honestly and genuinely, and that woman became my sponsor a week later when I finally did stop drinking. And 2 months later, I was having to move out of that place to live. I hadn't gone back to work at that bar. I decided to stay sober. And I gradually was turning my life and my will over to the care of a higher power because I'd been under the care of two higher powers, Superior Court Harbor and Superior Court South County. And they are not gentle higher powers. They were going to send me back to jail if I ever got caught driving on that suspended license again. And I learned about higher powers. And Kelly was so gentle with me, and she taught me to show up and help out. 60 days sober, I called her up and I said, I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight. I put my stuff in storage. She said, honey, Karen needs help setting up the Tuesday night meeting. The coffee person and the chair person are out of town. Why don't you go help them set up and share about it? She goes, my baby's crying. I've got to go. Call me and let me know where you're staying. I was terrified. But you know what? I'm grateful that I didn't have any place else to go, that this was the last house on the block for me, because I went there and I did that. And you know what? I didn't sleep in my car. I never slept in my car. And gradually I've learned through practical experience to walk a life of practical spirituality. And along the way, I've had the privilege of working with a few sponsors, Kathleen that comes here, Kim F., my current sponsor, Kathy. Today, I have people that trust me. I'm an accountant for a corporation. I handle millions of dollars a year. Credit card access, it blows my mind. And they trust me implicitly. And I am like, how did I get from there to here? In 2003, I was being of service to a meeting at the Canyon Club. I had taken on the secretary, and I was greeting a young lady by the name of Betsy. Betsy was this adorable brunette-headed gal that showed up at my meeting, and it was a gay meeting, and I thought she was this cute little straight girl that showed up at the wrong meeting. Turns out we ended up getting together. Turns out that her cousin Keenan was female-to-male transsexual, and she knew all about the whole story. Turns out that 6 months later, we were living together, and her sister was going to Iraq to work for a government contract. Turns out that her sister needed somebody to manage her website program for her company for her, and I could do it, and I could make the money in the next year, and I paid for my surgery. Why? Because I suited up, I showed up, I was volunteer, I was of service, and I thought about what I could give to somebody else before I thought what I could get for me. And it has worked for me to this day. To this day, I'm living a life that's beyond my, it's not all strawberries and orgasms, but it's wonderful. You know, I'm so overpaid and alcoholized now. If I have friends today that trust me, that call me, that I get to be a part of, that I can lean on. And you know what? I have dogs that trust me. You know, and when I was living with that last guy here in San Juan Capistrano, he had a dog, Cassie. And Cassie loved me. But I think Cassie got into my room one day, and she liked to snuffle up on the floor. And you know what happens with those white crystals and where they go. And one day she was pooping blood and died. And I know she'd had some other stuff going on, but I'm pretty sure that I was the contributing factor. You know, today what I can do is be a better pet parent. Today what I can do is not do those things that I did. Today what I can do is hopefully carry the message and make a difference in somebody else's life. There's a lot of suggestions in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what? Just be open. Stay. Don't go away. You know, that's partially all I've done. I've suited up and shown up no matter what. Sometimes I was isolated, and I used to be the queen of Pop-Tarts. I'd go home from work on Friday night, I'd buy boxes of Pop-Tarts and potato chips and ice cream, and I would binge, and then I would sleep, and then I would have to come out and go back to work. But you know what? Because my sponsor understood what I was going through, she gave me a wonderful thing to do. She gave me an assignment to be a part of a Miracles Happen, gay, lesbian, transsexual AA convention, and she taught me something. I am whole, loved, and perfect, just as I am, serving God, trusting God, knowing that everything is absolutely okay in this moment. My first sponsor, Kelly, gave me something else. I would call her up when I was staying at Michael's house or Stacy's house or somebody else's house, and I was in a panic. I didn't know. I was afraid. I was homeless. I didn't know how I was going to make it. And she'd ask me where I was. And I'd say, well, I'm at so-and-so's house. She goes, is there a roof over your head? Yes. She'd make me look up, look down, tell her what's there. And do I have clothes on? Have I eaten? Yeah. So right now, this very minute, when and where your feet are, you're okay. And when and where my feet are, I've always been okay. It's where my head can take me that's not okay. But when and where my feet are has always been okay. And I just have to slow down, be present. You know, and I don't know about who God is, universe is. I just know that it is. I have a God that's so big that doesn't care what I call it, and just as long as I call. That's the important thing. And that when I just go, okay, and then Kelly also told me something else. Do the next right indicated action, whether it's get up and brush your teeth, or whether it's lay down and go to sleep, or show up and go to work, Do the next right indicated action and leave the results. Oh, no. Sue told me the results are none of your business. And you know what? Whenever I've really taken that to heart, when I have taken that to heart, the results have blown my mind. When I've tried to manage and manipulate, just like my sponsor tells me today, my solutions sober are worse than the problems. Today, I hope that you guys have found something in this room, and I hope you hang on to it. This section here, I love this, and I know it's going to be read. You know, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. You will find so much in this pathway, this journey. There is just an amazing road that we get to walk and share with each other. You're in for the world. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride has nothing to do on sobriety. Thank you for letting me pursue this.